Looking deeper at pro-life activism, next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm host Eric Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principle and Policy. Along with me today is my co-host, our Vice Chairman of the Institute, fellow analyst, and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
And it's good to be with you again today, Barry. I think we're going to just continue our interesting discussion on Roe v. Wade on the upcoming 39th anniversary, 39 years of allowing the murder of infants and a death toll over 50 million children.
That's right. And honestly, I hate using the term anniversary because that implies something positive. This is more like the 39th straight year of a wake. But Chuck, I think if people were listening to us yesterday, kind of got the impression that I'm just observing. I'm tired of bemoaning and I'm tired of waiting on some messiah in a black robe to come along and make everything better. Because you and I are constitutional thinkers and we've studied that document and we understand that there are many in the pro-life community who haven't studied that document, who don't understand that Roe versus Wade is not the law of the land, no matter how many black robe justices, how many presidents, how many congresspeople, how many people in the media, and yes, how many pro-life leaders say to the contrary. The point is, at the best, the decision of Roe versus Wade, if in fact it was decided in a constitutional framework by the court, would only affect the two parties involved in the case, which would have been Jane Roe, who we now know as Norma McCorvey, and the Attorney General of the state of Texas, and by extension, since he's representing the state of Texas. However, we talked about the legal fictions surrounding all of that that people buy into, and then they continue to spout back to people as if it were gospel. And so why do we have a situation now, here in 39 years later, going on almost an entire biblical generation? And I think there's something important about the fact that if we get to the 40th year and we still haven't figured this out, I think there's going to be some even more massive repercussions on this country than just the fact that over 50 million of our fellow citizens have been slaughtered without a defense. But the point,
well, that's because Christians have lost the idea that God actually does bring judgment on his people, not only for sin, but also the sin of doing nothing.
And well, that's true.
And doing nothing is a form of sin.
Well, but you know what, Chuck? I think that if we went out on the street there on Monday and we asked people, have you been doing anything to end abortion? You're going to hear a long litany and laundry list of things, whether it's standing in front of an abortion clinic or working in a pregnancy distress center or giving money to ministries in relation to abortion or working to do various things. I'm supporting X candidate and Y candidate for president because they're going to take care of it by appointing the right judges to the Supreme Court. The point is, a lot of that effort is honestly wasted effort. Now, I will not say that the effort's wasted if somebody wants to stand in front of an abortion clinic and try to convince a woman through God's word and through logic and reason why she shouldn't continue into that abattoir and take the life of the life that's inside her. I'm all fine for that. I think that that is commendable. That is basically your best grassroots approach whatsoever. But to basically go out and parade and get behind a particular political party because you think that they're going to get the magic combination and get the right guy in office who's going to nominate the right judge who will then become the right Supreme Court justice to right the injustice and create the new law of the land. Honestly, it shows a lack of understanding of our form of government. We talked about it in brief yesterday about, you know, the real solid way of doing this once and for all is for pro-life leaders, pro-life grassroots, those who want to see the end of the slaughter, instead of working to elect a president or to get a better Supreme Court mix, which we know honestly is a fiction, is to get constitutionally literate and principled pro-life people in the public office, especially as we go into the offices of Congress and the United States Senate. Now, Charles, I'm going to give a codicil here because, you know, this is one of my pet peeves. I'm not saying that a pro-lifer who's out there and who really wants to end abortion should go and run for Congress tomorrow or run for the United States Senate when they've never been involved in politics before, or they've never tried to run for an office or ever had a position in any kind of a political body whatsoever. Now, some people will tut-tut me saying, well, experience isn't half, you know, that's just the way the parties operate is you've got to have run something before. Honestly, I've worked with candidates. I've worked with candidates who have been in office before and who've run for things before, and candidates who haven't. And I'm going to tell you right now, honestly, ladies and gentlemen, if we're going to get serious about this, if you've never run for an office before, don't start at Congress. Don't run for the United States Senate. And for the love of all that's holy, please don't file to run for President of the United States if you've never, ever held an office in your life before. You need to start by looking local. Find out something you can do. And it doesn't have to be an elected office to start with. You can find out in your local community. There's various boards and commissions. And I know we don't like the growth of government. We like limited government. But these things already exist, and you're able to get an appointment. You're going to learn experience. You're going to get the experience of what it takes to govern. You're also possibly going to get the experience of some of the things you're going to need to do if you're going to look for those offices like Congress, and that is fundraising and messaging and how to contact voters the right way, and how to understand how to get your principles across in a way that's winsome and in a way that's effective with people. You know, I see too many times too many great people, and the first thing they do, they want to file to run for Congress. Oh, honestly, really, I don't think I know of one, Chuck, that's ever gotten in office on the first shot without ever having had any experience whatsoever before.
Oh, well, I can't think of anybody either. I mean, everybody started at a school board or drain commissioner or something like that.
Dog catcher. I mean, it does it. Your local school board, your building, your zoning commission, your building standards commission, parks and rec commission. It doesn't matter what it might be. If you honestly have a call on your life that you need to be a voice in public office, you need to be a voice in public office, not running for a public office.
One of the problems that we're running into is that people don't understand this idea that Americans are really bad about waiting for things. They
yeah,
want
I call
the biggest
it the microwave mentality.
Yes, they want the biggest and the best and the most expensive, and they want it right now, which is why some of us are carrying around $30,000 in debt on our credit cards. The fact is that the best way to approach this is also the best way to approach a lot of things, and that is build, save, learn, do it slowly. And of course, for some of us, I mean, I'm going to be 55 in about 6 weeks. So my time to start being a political player, if I decide to do that, is drawing slightly thin, but I'm a better as a behind the scenes guy anyway. I'm not an upfront kind of guy, but I would still see myself possibly taking one of these appointments to a board or committee, just basically to be a gadfly for all the guys who are involved in all this regional planning, which is really not on topic right now, but you should think in those terms. Yes, start slow, build up, and as you learn how things are done, and you learn more and more and more, because Tip O'Neill's famous saying that all politics is local is absolutely correct. You right. need to get to learn to know your neighbors and what goes on in your community before you can run for Congress in that community. You really have to know what's going on. You have to go speak in front of the Rotary Club, and you have to go shake hands with and deal with people who want to stop their neighbor from building a fence in their yard or stop their neighbors from parking a boat in their yard and say, really, is that your property? You really want to stop your neighbor from using his property as he sees fit? How is it actually harming you to have your neighbor park his boat or his camper in his yard? And you have to learn how to answer those questions in a winning way.
Right,
not
right.
I mean, I have a tendency to be sarcastic, so I have to fight that constantly. But that's one of the things that we're running into, Barry, is that everybody that comes in and wants to, as we've said, we've been involved in third-party politics. Everybody wanted to run for Congress or Senate or governor.
That's right.
And it's sort of like, what office have you held before? Well, I own my own business. Well, that'll get you elected to a city council in the town you live in. Start there. But of course, nobody ever did. They all wanted to run for these high offices. Well, it just doesn't work out.
And, no, it doesn't.
And then we also had people who wanted to grandstand. For instance, earlier in the campaign, it was announced that Randall Terry was running for president, I think as a Democrat, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, I believe
well,
so.
Well, what for? Seriously, what for? Randall Terry, many of you know, is a pro-life activist who, what was in the Operation Rescue?
Yeah, he started Operation Rescue.
And it's morphed into other things. And the guy has spent so much of his life doing these things that he destroyed his marriage and he destroyed his family. And he's done a number of things. Now he's decided that he's going to make a point by running for president. It's a waste of time and money. He's getting exactly zero attention. In fact, I bet most of our listeners out there had no idea he was running for president.
I would assume that the vast majority of them didn't. Now, I want to kind of bring this back around because we record this. We're recording this actually the night before the March for Life. Now, I took a look at the website for the National March for Life. They've created their own education and defense fund around the march, and they're actually selling tickets to a dinner tomorrow night. And other things. Now, the big thing is, I don't think you're ever going to see anybody, if they ever report this on the news, which they probably won't, holding signs up saying, are you going to limit the jurisdiction of the federal courts to their opening remark speaker, who happens to be John Boehner, congressman from Ohio, speaker of the United States House of Representatives. A man who says he's pro-life, has pro-life bona fides, votes for everything pro-life, but who, as the speaker of the House, could have been, or could still be, if he gets this message, a leader who understands what it takes to truly end this fight. And that is, remove it from the venues of the federal courts. John Boehner could take a leadership and say, we're going to pass this law that says that the federal courts have no jurisdiction over abortion jurisprudence. Do you think he's going to do that?
No.
Okay. I doubt very much either. We're sitting here in the state of Ohio, and we have a huge debate going on with those leaders who say they're pro-life over a bill that would ban abortions when you can detect a fetal heartbeat. And to this date, those leaders in the Ohio Senate that doesn't even want to hear a bill that would ban abortions after the heartbeat is detected in an unborn baby. So if they don't want to do that here in Ohio, I don't think we can expect an Ohio congressman like John Boehner to take leadership in saying, we're going, as a party, he can say this to the Republican Party, we're pro-life, and this is our banner. We're going to continue to push, and in every bill that comes forward, we're going to write a provision in there that takes abortion out of the jurisdiction of the federal courts and leaves it to the courts in the state, in each of the 50 states. They could do that. They could even do it quietly, just like Tom Daschle did when he took the court's jurisdiction away from hearing any cases dealing with timber issues in South Dakota. John Boehner could take it away from the federal courts on abortion, but we don't see that happening because it's all about politics. And abortion, I'm going to be honest, abortion is too sexy of an issue for either of the political parties in this country to want to see it end one way or another. If abortion was illegal, it takes it out of the playbook of the Republican Party. If we have a finding that abortion is totally legal and everything gets rolled back and Roe v. Wade becomes, quote unquote, the law of the land, no doubt of the playbook of the Democratic Party. None of these folks truly want to see it end. Now, they don't mind going back and forth like a tug of war over small incremental steps. Okay, well, we can't do this thing like partial birth, but we're also going to write laws that basically says that you can't bring charges against somebody who do perform abortions. Now, you think I'm joking. Now, this gets me around to the other thing I want to say. Now, for those of you who think it's all about the presidency and it's all about certain candidates who say they're pro-life, and we got to get behind these guys because they're the ones who are going to pick the new justices on the courts when all the other ones die off. Here's what happened. And this is a sign that's going to be held up tomorrow. God bless folks who are doing this. This is a sign that's going to be held up tomorrow at the March for Life. And it says, in 2004, the first time in history, a right to abortion is encoded in federal law. And they're right. In 2004, there was a bill passed in Congress that actually wrote abortion as a right into federal law. See, Roe v. Wade isn't the law of the land, but this bill was the law of the land. Now, it says who was one of the authors? The same who voted for Title X federal funds to Planned Parenthood and endorsed abortion advocate Arlen Specter. And the sign in big black bold letters says, Rick Santorum, once pro-abortion, still constitutionally ignorant. And they have a quote from the law. Title 18, United States Code, Section 1841, quote, nothing in this section shall be construed to permit the prosecution of any person's conduct relating to an abortion. Chuck, it doesn't get any clearer than that. That law in 2004 was also co-authored by an Ohio senator, not just Rick Santorum, and that was Mike DeWine in Ohio. Folks, what we have in our federal law is an encoding of abortion. Instead of writing into that bill, the federal courts have no jurisdiction and leaving it to the states direction and said, well, yeah, we'll let the courts hear it, but we'll give them something to stand on.
What we need, Barry, as you've stated, and unfortunately you faded out, was we need constitutional literacy. And just as we close out today, I'm going to point out that I've taken some heat from friends of yours and mine for referring to Rick Santorum as a constitutional nincompoop. And this is one of the proofs. I'm not afraid to say something like that. Rick Santorum is a constitutional nincompoop because of things like this law that he was a co-author on. And I'll say the same thing for Mike DeWine. We are out of time, so join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.